Power Supply Posse. Just wanted to give you a quick little heads up before this episode with Brooke Shaden. There is a little bit of noise at one point during the recording that we just couldn't edit out, so I thought I would give you a little heads up and offer a little apology at the top before we get into the episode. It isn't particularly for very long, but yeah, we just wanted to make you aware of it. So anyhow, I really hope you enjoyed this episode.
The newest member of the posse creates visually arresting images that make the viewer stop, ponder their beauty, and then want to know more. At least they did when I first looked at them, and in fact, every time I look at this artist's work, and I really hope that when you look at her work, you'll feel the same. Her website describes her as a self-portrait artist who becomes the characters of dreams inspired by a childhood of intense imagination and fear. To me, it seems in adulthood that she has tamed that darkness, those fears, through using her creative output. Hello, Brooke Shaden. Welcome to the Art Supply Posse.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
My absolute pleasure. So I want to know, and this might be the biggest question of all, I guess, which is, why did you become an artist?
It's such a good question, actually, because I think that a lot of people don't know why they become artists when they start out. And I think that's very valid. And it's definitely a process of exploration. But for me, I sort of took a slow track to becoming an artist through my adolescence, where I was practicing writing and then practicing filmmaking. And then when I got to photography, it was sort of like I had already figured out why I want to be creating and how. And so photography became sort of an instant hit for me, where everything that I wanted to do, I could do with a camera, and everything that I wanted to say had been leading to that moment. So I became an artist because I had a lot of fears and a lot of darkness that I dealt with in my life that just caused a lot of anxiety. And I thought, what can I do that will allow me to explore that darkness in a way that gives me control? And so my journey was just immediately about gaining control over my fears and depicting that visually, and then seeing if there was anyone out there in the void that would connect to that as well.
I think that's one of the things. I mean, the listeners know that I love photography. Like, that's my first love. And for me, I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, you know, writing requires the process of writing, because usually, you know, you're going to write more than a sentence. And, you know, filmmaking and all that, that's a big, long, time-consuming thing. Whereas photography, I mean, even when, and we'll get into your particular type of art and how it sort of all comes to exist, but, like, even when you are composing, manipulating, bringing in other elements, whatever, it's still pretty instant. Like, it's still pretty quick. You get that result, even if you take the picture and then look at the back of the camera, you can see even if it's not finished, you're at that point where you know you're on the right track. Like, that's one of the cool things about photography that I love.
Yes, and that's, for me, what drew me to it immediately. Like, it's an immediate art form. You click the button and you get something, even if it's terrible, there's something there to work with. And I think that's so nice, for especially for us who are visually minded, where maybe you know, the things that we see in our mind are complex, and it might take a year if you're making a film, or 2 years if you're writing a novel, or whatever it is. But a photograph can be instant. And while my work is not instant, there's still that building block that makes it so much easier to move on to the next step. I find it so comforting.
Yeah, you can see that, like, you've got that first little instant, okay, this is the base of it, and then, yep, you know that you've got more to add, but you still can see it's on the right track or where it's
exactly
going.
This is why I always really underexpose my images, like, in camera, mm-hmm. and people always say, your images are so dark, like, you're not shooting properly. And I always say, yeah, but they're gonna be dark anyway, and I need that first step to look at least a little bit how I want it to look in the end.
I love that comment that you're not doing it properly, because it's not even that saying of like, if you know the rules, you can break them. I mean, yeah, okay, that's what you're doing, but you know where you're getting to, so you know what you need to start with, and that's valid. And if that means you're underexposing, then go right ahead. Like, who cares,
exactly,
really?
I think that a lot of photographers especially work from start to finish, which sounds obvious, but I work from finish to start, and so mm-hmm. I know exactly what I want that image to look like in the end every time I take a picture, or at least nearly every time. And so for me, it's a process of deconstructing. And so when I first take that picture, I've already gone through the work of saying, what is this going to look like from composition to color, etc., and then I deconstruct. So it's a little different for me.
Yeah. So I'm feeling a bit like conflicted, because I've seen so much of your work in my research, and just because I've been following you for a long time anyway, so I kind of know what you're doing. But let's step back a second for the listeners who may have never heard of Brooke Shaden before, has no idea what you and I are talking about, and is probably yelling at me going, Kim, please get Brooke to explain her work. How would you explain your artwork?
You know, it's definitely conceptual. It's under the fine art heading. And really, that's just a fancy way of saying that I make work for myself first and foremost, and then I sell it to others. So mm-hmm. So that aside, it's very much driven by darkness, by the idea first. And then, you know, my work is very painterly. It's very sort of whimsical, surreal. So a lot of what I do is illustrative and narrative based. It's about the idea, the story, and then building up sort of an imaginary scene to make it look as realistic as possible.
Now, do you, well, I guess maybe you do, but like you said, so you said you start at the end and deconstruct. So
yeah.
Do you though every single time know what you want to create? Like how does, because, you know, when I was doing my research, obviously I see that you also, you know, there's writing components and other things sort of brought into it. Do you have in mind exactly what that end piece needs to be, or are you throwing around different ways to get to that end point, if that makes sense?
It does make sense, and I definitely do have to explore during the process, which I think that if I didn't, then I'd just be a robot, you know, like just making it easily. And I always have a very strong sense of what I want it to be, but then sometimes the images tell me something else, and so sometimes I have to veer off course, or simply what I thought was going to happen doesn't happen in the creative process, as I'm sure everybody knows. Maybe you go out and take pictures, whether it's pictures or film or dance or writing, it doesn't really matter. You think that these elements are going to turn into one thing, and then you mix them together and it's something totally different. And there are times in my process where I'm okay with that, and I let it guide me into a new idea and a new art piece. And then there are other times where I'll reshoot the same photo 6 times because I just can't quite get it right. And I'm just really bent on that final outcome.
Which can sometimes be a problem.
Yes. Yeah. It's a real obsession.
Yeah. So you do, well, it's basically self-portraiture, I guess, is at the core of what you're doing. Where did that idea come from to use yourself as a subject? Because, like, you can still produce work based off your internal, you know, your fears or your darkness, your experiences, whatever, but use another, like a different subject as opposed to yourself. So why use yourself?
Yeah, well, you know, it started with just social anxiety. I just did not want to talk to anybody if I could avoid it at all mm-hmm. costs. And so I decided, well, I'm here and I can use myself at least to start out. And I did that, but it was definitely more than that. I mean, there was the social anxiety component, but then there was also The fact that I'm very impatient and I hated waiting for people. Like the thought of having to have an idea and then wait days to book somebody and get the shoot together, I just couldn't do it. I was like, I have an idea. I don't care if it's 5 a.m. I'm up and doing it. And so it was actually one of the best things for my career because in the beginning, I wasn't waiting to schedule photo shoots. I made probably 200 images the first year that I started just because I was doing it constantly without having to wait on anybody. And I had just come out of film school, and the result of that was that I was constantly waiting for people and working with other people, and I did not enjoy that process. So I found so much freedom in it. And then it was sort of the third tier to that was that, yeah, I was impatient and I didn't want to talk to people. But then I realized that when I started using models or other people in my work, I found it a lot less satisfying. I found it very difficult to pose people how I wanted. I found that if I used fashion models, they had a certain idea of what looked pretty. And if I used my friends, then they had no idea what to do with their bodies. And it was just frustrating. And so I thought, you know, there's really something to be said for creating images that are personal to me and that I am in, because I know intimately how to portray those ideas.
Mm. So when I look through your work and I see, I mean, obviously they are you, and yet somehow you manage to make them feel like it could be anybody's experience. Like I know when I look at, you know, you look at some self-portrait work and you think, okay, that's that person, and it's super obvious that it is that particular person. Yet there's some kind of quality about your work that, yes, okay, I know it's Brooke because I know her work, and I, you know.
Yeah.
And yet it could be anybody, really. Was that a sort of something you were trying to achieve, or has that just kind of naturally come through as you've been working through your experiences and emotions and that thing that really we all have very similar experiences?
Yeah, this was one of the things that was immediate when I started photography, where I knew that if I was going to do self-portraits, I did not want to show my face in the portraits. Not mm-hmm. because I was particularly shy or, you know, thought that I was ugly or something like that, but just because I didn't want the viewer to see me in the picture. I found myself really drawn to painting as an art form and not photography. And in fact, to this day, I still am not the biggest fan of photography in general. Now, I love certain photographers, but I always really liked that paintings felt so distant from me, from my real life, because they're sort of like a second level illustration of something rather than a literal depiction of something. And so I wanted to bring that element into my work where anybody could see whoever they wanted. I did that by not showing my face, but also by trying to become characters that had perhaps lived a multitude of lives and who could depict different experiences. I realized that if I was just going based on my personal life that I've lived, then my experiences would be very limited. And, you know, the stories that I told would be quite small at that time in my life, having not lived very much, or at least nothing very interesting, I thought. So you know, it was very intentional from the get-go that I did not want people to see me in the pictures.
Is that... I'm wondering, because there is... I mean, you know, you said you underexposed, so you love the darkness. How do you think you manage to make that beautiful? Because I think it is incredibly beautiful, and yet I'm sure there are a lot of people who would say, oh, this isn't beautiful, because they're looking at it through the lens of, you know, like traditional beauty norms. I guess actually what you were touching on with using models, like they're what, you know, any given day the models are what, I don't know who determines who's beautiful. I don't even know how you get into that rabbit hole, but like,
yeah.
How do you manage to bring, and maybe it's the normalcy of beauty that I'm seeing, or the normalcy of grief and darkness, because like you can't have a life that is 100% positive. Like I just don't think that's the normal human experience. So how do you bring that darkness to the work, but then still allow that beauty to kind of shine through?
Yeah, I think that I do this in a couple of ways, at least I hope I do. One is that I pay a lot of attention to visuals and I study light and color quite extensively. And so my goal is to create a sense of atmosphere that is not completely dark, where there's some, you know, literal visual light happening in the image that draws you in, where the color palette has some sort of color to it that lets you latch on to that brightness or that symbol that it represents. And then beyond that, I think that it becomes a much more complicated issue of what story are you trying to tell about the darkness? And this is where I think certain work like mine could fall on the side of horror or something that's really dark in an upsetting way versus dark in a hopeful way. And so my take on it is that I'm constantly trying to imbue my work with hope and to give the message that even though there is darkness, this person is persevering in some way. And I do that through color, through light, and through the posing, through the wardrobe, you know, through just small gestures. And I think that that comes through. And I always know when it doesn't, like when it's a definite no, like when I create something and I think, oh, that makes me upset or that makes me uncomfortable. And that happens, you know. I just recently was looking through my archive of images that I didn't release last year that I just kind of gave up on. And there was one where it was like, it was me holding myself in my arms and I had a big saw and I was like cutting my head off. And I looked at that and I was like, what was I thinking that day? Because that is dark. Like, that's not like, there's no hope in this picture. And that's kind of where I draw the line. Like, can somebody look at this and see their own experience, but find some beauty in it? And that's where I try to live in that realm.
Well, that was your horror moment, and that's okay. That's a whole other genre, and yes. I'm sure somebody would like it, but just perhaps not you and your audience, but that's okay.
Yes.
We are not going to shame anyone for their loves and their things. It's just not necessarily for you.
Yes.
So now, if you're okay with talking about it, I do know that you've fostering children has part of your life as well. And of course,
yes.
My first thought was, how do you bring that to your art? And then I went, well, of course you bring that to your art because it's like, it's your life, whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's being a foster mom or whether it's being a working retail, like everything about your life you bring to your art, I think, really.
But yes.
Is there some way that perhaps this is like processing what it's like to be a foster parent, to have children, and then to not have those children as well? Like, is that part of what's going on here?
Yeah, definitely it is. And there are a lot of layers to this. And part of it, just for some backstory, is that I really wanted to have children for a long time. And, for reasons that I keep private, that did not happen. And so fostering was sort of like my only chance at having kids. And I started that process in 2019 and became a foster parent in 2019. And I have since had 6 children who I've said goodbye to all of them. And I have had to really internalize that. And so I want to pivot really quickly to just sharing a story about a writer's conference that I went to a year ago. And at this writer's conference, there were a lot of memoir writers. And I was not there for memoir writing, but I learned a lot about it. And what I noticed was that in this masterclass that I took, a lot of people gave their pitch for their memoir. And it was, you know, everything you can imagine someone having lived through was in that room. And the agents who were teaching the class kind of said, you know, you all have a good story. Like, there's no one here who doesn't have a good story. But what you need to do is go a step beyond having a good story. And you need to understand what other people need to learn about your story. Like, what's important for other people to understand. And I started to really internalize that. And I took that to my foster care journey. And I thought, what do I think other people need to understand about my journey fostering children? And the answer for me was that I believe that we can live more fulfilling lives if we learn to love without ownership. And that became sort of this mantra in my life ever since of, if I'm going to talk about having children and saying goodbye to them, then it needs to be through the lens of how I believe that impermanence is a a good and beautiful thing for us to experience. And so that's how I personally bring it into my art.
I think it's an interesting thing, because as someone who's not at all in the fostering world and actually isn't somebody who is a mother, it doesn't feel like to me it's commonly spoken about or doesn't appear to be just generally written about. Like, you might occasionally see a news story where somebody's at the older age, you know, like they're in their 70s or something, and they've fostered, I was just going to say 100 children, because some of them do, and we applaud the person at the end of their life, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't feel like it's sort of a mainstream sort of topic, whether that's for news stories, whether that's for art, whether that's for anything. And I wonder, are we missing a big chunk of life by not sort of commonly having that in the day-to-day?
Yeah, I wonder the same thing. And I definitely, you know, when I became a foster parent the whole year before, when I was training for it, I of course went on Instagram and started looking at who are the foster parents out there, what are they saying, and I found that most of the content was either these rose-colored glasses, like, oh, I just love my foster kids so much and they get along with my biological children so well, and it was like all these stories, and I thought, oh, well, that's great, I mean, maybe that's how it'll be for me. And then on the other side, it was these people saying, like, this was the most horrible experience of my life, and I can't believe I got through this and survived and all of that. And I thought, there's nothing in between. Like, it's either influencer type people saying this is amazing, or people just like at the end of their rope. And so I took that really seriously. And what I hope to contribute with my story about it is that there are a lot of ways to help other people. There are a lot of ways to give back to the world. And this was my route, and hopefully someone can gain inspiration from it. I mean, that's my hope, because it was really painful. And, you know, and I hope that somebody gets something positive from it, as I have.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like anything in life. Of course, there's going to be incredible highs that, you know, where you're living something and it's just wonderful, and it's, you just think, I will never feel any better than this. And then, you know, something else will happen and it will be terrible and the absolute worst. But there's an awful lot in between too that maybe we don't focus enough on.
Yeah, and I think that's why art is so amazing, because you can focus on the nuance of it, and not a lot of, you know, there aren't a lot of opportunities in everyday life to really delve into the details and the nitty gritty of a situation. So it's, I feel very lucky that I make these narrative pieces that allow me to go deep into the symbols that have impacted my life and how that can affect others.
Mm. So when you're talking symbols, is that, do you mean stories and things you read or heard about or viewed when you were a child? Like, is it that kind of symbolism, or is it more a sort of ephemeral kind of, doesn't really have something attached to it, but it's more of the thoughts?
Yeah, I think that it starts for me with ideas. And you know, if we take the idea of being a foster parent, for example, which has been important in my life, then I start to ask, well, how can I represent that to somebody else, possibly somebody who doesn't speak the same language I do, who has not had the same experiences that I have had? How can I communicate this in a way that anybody could understand? And I think this is where symbolism comes in, where I'm using objects and locations and wardrobe and certain lighting, etc., to communicate a story through the symbol that those things represent, which is universal. You know, it's the way that anybody around the world largely can understand what I'm saying because of the visual language that I'm putting forth. So symbolism is really important to me. And this is, I think, how stories then turn into myths, and how we have this consistency of story across countries and language barriers, because, you know, the stories come to represent a thing bigger than itself.
I think that when you started talking, that the immediate thought I had was your work, Forbidden Fruit, which is perfect, because that has its own well, its own symbolism, its own connotations, its own,
yes,
you know, when you say those words, you think of something immediately, whether or not you actually have any religious beliefs or not. It's one of those things that just is part of the lexicon, at least for us in the Western world, I guess. I shouldn't sort of, you know, broaden that out too far, but it's something I know of, and yet your yes. take on it is completely different and a lot better, in my opinion.
Thank you.
I mean, a lot more realistic.
Hey, I'll take it. You know, that's one of my favorite pieces that I've created in the last couple years for many reasons, and partly because it's about my foster journey, my parenthood journey, and partly because I was so just surprised and pleased with how many people resonated with that symbolism. And it's not the image, you know, like I hesitate to say people resonated with the image, because what people are resonating with is, and I'll describe this very quickly in case somebody does not know what I'm talking about, which is probably true.
Yes, good idea. Yeah, good idea.
So for those who do not know what I'm talking about with this image, Fallen Fruit, it is an image where I'm kneeling on a table and I have my skirts pulled up my thighs and there are red berries smeared on my thighs and red berries all over the table. And it is looks very similar to blood, and it has that sort of visceral feeling to it, as though a woman were bleeding. And so that image was, I think, really important for me to release because people resonated with that imagery. And I think the fact that it wasn't real blood allowed people to look a little bit closer and for a little bit longer and to sit with it, because it wasn't in the horror genre. But it was very arresting, I think, with the color and the pose, and very strong at the same time. There's sort of a sense in that picture of strength and ownership of the situation, which I think a lot of people resonated with and were thankful for. And I think that that's one of those rare moments in an artist's life where you create something so meaningful to you, and then you actually get the feedback that it's meaningful to other people in similar ways. And I think that's how artists connect with the world, right? Is by making something that is so startlingly accurate to their own experience, and that proves to be accurate to other people's as well.
It's funny you say strength, because I see strength in every piece of yours. It doesn't matter what the symbolism is, what the concept behind it is. I think every single one of them shows strength to a various degree, of course, but
yeah,
every image I see a strong woman, and I love that, because I don't think we see enough of that. But what I also love about it is it's strength, but in different ways. It's shown in different ways. It doesn't, yeah, I don't know. That's just, you know, I suppose this is part of the thing about language, isn't it? Like, you know, I might say the word strength and someone might think of a person who has gained strength from, you know, working out, which is exactly what that could be. But strength is also getting through a difficult situation, or, you know, keeping on going when perhaps they might feel like they can't. Like, there's so much more to a word, particularly that kind of word, than we often think about.
Oh, I totally agree. I was just thinking about this concept in a slightly different way, but with the concept of fear, for example. You know, we always say you got to be fearless, but really you need to be fearful, and then you have to find the bravery to overcome that. And I think the same is true of strength. You have to experience weakness to know what it is to be strong. And I think that dichotomy is what at least I'm playing with in my work, is the balance between it's okay to feel weak if you can find the strength to come out of it in some way.
Mm. I think it's interesting, actually, because the other word that came to mind just then when you were describing that is anger. Like, people say, you know, well, you shouldn't be angry. You shouldn't have anger in your life. What have you got to be angry about? Well, but anger is, to me, an incredibly important emotion, because it does drive a lot of art, you know, like, and it drives us forward, or it can, if we let it, if we don't let it overtake us and become, you know, it can become quite an awful experience to be angry all the time. But if you use that anger in the right way and use that to push yourself forward, particularly as an artist, some incredible things can come from it.
Absolutely. I think that really all art comes from this point counterpoint, this weight counterweight, you know, where you feel one thing and then you have to feel the opposite to have a full experience.
Yeah, definitely. So when you're creating, so we'll step back to that. When you've got your idea in mind, and I don't know why, but I'm imagining you have like a huge wardrobe of different outfits and
yes.
Yeah, that's incredible. And obviously you've got like plenty of access to fruit and, you know, we've got fantastic woods and all these things going on around you. Do you actually, I'm just going to tangent off for a second. Do you travel very far to your locations or are they all quite close to your home?
Most are really close. I actually moved 10 years ago to a region where I would have access to creeks and rivers and lakes and mountains and forest and desert all within an hour drive because I'm pretty spoiled now. So yeah, I just thought I don't want to be traveling all over to get to these different locations. So I live in a really great spot right now.
Well, that's good too, because it speaks to the immediacy of creating your work. Like you don't have to go very far. So that's even better. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in these locations, you're creating these images, these self-portraits, but then of course there's more to it than simply that photo. What then are you doing? Are you coming back and do you take more photos of other things and sort of incorporate them all in when you do your post-processing? Do you bring in any elements such as like actual paintings or things like that? I'm just curious to know a little bit more about the actual constructing of an image.
Yeah, I try if I go out on location to bring everything that I need on location, which is dangerous sometimes. The other day I went out in a blizzard. It was like, you know, 7 a.m. right when the sun was up. And I, of course, slipped in the road with a ladder on top of me. It was a whole situation. I was totally fine. Just have a massive bruise on my knee, but it's okay. Anyway, so I try to bring everything on location, which is difficult sometimes because it's just me here. So, you know, so I'm going out there carrying it all myself. And when I can't, I photograph things at my home. And sometimes I incorporate things like paintings or paint into my images where, for example, there's an image that I have called In Service to Joy. And that image has a rainbow painted into it where I made a watercolor rainbow and I photographed it and added that in. So there are times when there's some mixed media involved. I have done mixed media pieces where I on top of the prints will add paint or different elements into the print itself. So it's really a multi-layered process, but most frequently I shoot everything on location, come back, composite it together, and then that will take me, you know, hours or days depending on the piece.
Yep. So you did touch on it. Your work is available, of course. People can purchase your images. And I believe you've also had work like exhibitions and things. What is that whole process like? Because the work is so incredibly personal to you. And yet, as you said, it's also, it touches on so many common things for people that it hits a lot of people, you know, right in the good spot. But what is it like seeing your work out in the world, no longer simply existing in Brooke's little world, Brooke's little space, but actually out somewhere else?
Yeah, you know, I think that in the art world there's this sort of sense or expectation really that if you are an artist, then you create for yourself. And I don't really believe in that for me. I create because I want to affect other people. And yes, it's fun and it's amazing and it's a form of therapy for me and I love it. And I would do it regardless of if anyone saw it. But part of my goal in my life is to impact as many people as I can in a positive way. And I believe that art is a beautiful way of doing that. So when I create a piece and I release a piece, I truly release it. Like I don't even really think of it as mine completely anymore because I think that the more people that see it and comment on it, have a feeling toward it, hate it, love it, whatever, I think that it becomes theirs too, and the piece becomes bigger because of it. So when I release something, it's really gone from my hands, and I believe it belongs to a collective. And so that's why I think it's so exciting to be an artist right now. I mean, like, we can create and release and create and release and have these experiences with other people that are so rare and beautiful. So yes, my work is in galleries, and you know, it's shown pretty widely, and I think that that's such a wonderful thing to know that someone who I've never met might just walk into a gallery off the street one day and then have a totally new experience based on something from my life, you know, across the world that you know, they would have never known.
Do you think this, because it does feel like, certainly when I'm looking through your Instagram feed, it does feel like you have a community happening there. Do you think perhaps the experiences people are sharing with you, even if it's only a very brief comment, do you think in some way that affects what you produce going forward?
It does. And I really appreciate you saying that. Like, my community is my proudest thing in my life. I love the people who are willing to interact with what I'm doing. I think that's so special. And so whenever somebody comments or shares something with me, it's not that I necessarily take that experience that they've had to create from it, but I definitely, it's sort of confirmation bias in a sense. It's, you know, you put something out, you hear about somebody's tangential experience, and you realize that the depth and breadth of what you thought was out there is so much more than you ever thought possible. And then that expands what you're able to create when you realize, oh, I could take this even further because somebody has experienced that, and it's okay to go deeper with this idea. And I think that it gives me a lot of courage to do that.
Well, I think that's one of the really special things about social media particularly, is it does allow you to experience the human condition in so many different ways, but also to connect through it. Like, you know, particularly, like, I'm speaking from myself, of someone living with anxiety. Quite often I think I'm the only one in the world that has this, even though I know that's not true. Like, it's just a thought you sometimes think. And yet when you can see someone else who has gone through the same thing, is going through the same thing, or just even feels something like you feel, there's that deeper kind of connection and that, oh, I'm not alone in the world. You know, this person here, I know I've spoke to them in the past and I know I can speak to them again. And so I think you kind of take all that in, and then that, it does kind of feel like it gets into the mix of making the art.
Definitely. You know, I don't know how this idea came to be at the beginning of my photography career. I don't know if I thought it or if somebody said this to me, but I remember thinking that I am not as interesting as I think I am, and in a good way, like in a, yes, in a, an uplifting way, because I realize that, like, the experiences that I'm having, the ways that I'm feeling, that is not unique. Like, I am not as special as I think I am. And so to realize that whenever I feel anything, I mean, I don't care if it's the smallest bit of anxiety or the pain of losing a child, I know somebody has experienced this before. I never doubt that. I never question that. And that ability to not question what you're feeling and to create knowing that somebody will connect to that, I think that's a real rarity. I think that a lot of artists question, will anybody connect to this? Will anybody feel anything about this? You know, is this experience unique to me? And I have never wondered that. And I think that that has been the number one thing that has afforded me a career in this industry, is that I create knowing that somebody needs to see what I have to put out. And I don't mean that in you know, like, I'm the best kind of way, because I guarantee you tons of other people could do what I do in their own way, and it would be beautiful. But I think that there's something to be said about boldly going into this craft, understanding that you have impact innately instead of wondering if you have impact. And I think that makes all the difference.
Even if you can, and I know for some people that would sort of, that statement would feel a bit like, oh my goodness, there's no way I could impact anybody's life. But even if you think of one person that, And it doesn't even have to be a person you know, but it can, you can imagine in your mind another person experiencing your art and getting something from it. I think that that can make such a difference. Like, I often think, because one of the things I always say, like, I will talk to anybody about my experience with mental illness, because I think if I can help just one person in a teeny tiny teeny little way, I'm good with mm-hmm. that, like, you know. And I think this is the same with art. If you can just connect with one other person, then really that's it.
I totally agree. I think that, you know, I think about my experiences, and I think if there is just one person out there who has experienced something similar but has not yet grounded themselves in the beauty of that experience, then I can give that to them. And that makes all the difference in how they might experience the world from then on out, if they feel alone or not, if they understand how to navigate that experience. And it's not because I've lived a perfect experience or my lesson is perfect. It's just knowing that there's somebody else who has done it.
Mm. So I want to slightly turn the conversation as we sort of head towards the end of things. I want you to think about the listener who has connected with something you've said, and maybe perhaps they've been creating art that they just, maybe it hasn't really connected with them, and they're not quite sure why it hasn't been giving them what they need. And I think perhaps what it might be, let's think about, you know, maybe they need to be, you know, bringing some of this depth from their life mm-hmm. to their art. How do you think, how would you suggest somebody to kind of tap into that?
You know, I think there are a lot of avenues that will lead to this place, and I think that one of them is time. And I think that we live in this world of immediacy where we don't give ourselves time to discover what that is. But I think about the beginning of my journey in photography, and for context, the way that I started my career, which is like the craziest story to tell now, is that I started taking self-portraits of myself looking dead in different places. Like, that was my photography when I started. It was like me dead in a bathtub, and then dead in a trash can, and then dead in a freezer. Like, it was really weird. And I started putting that online, and some of the reactions were like, oh my God, this is so cool, I love this. And some of the reactions were, you shouldn't be allowed to put this on the internet. Like you, I hope that you die, like literally. Oh, and so, oh. You know, it was really extreme. And, mm-hmm. and what I learned from that, it's a very polarizing thing to put your work on the internet when you're saying something that's unique to you. But if you can somehow channel your inner weirdo, like the part of you where you think if somebody saw this, they would turn and run the other way because it's too weird. Like, that's what I think we need to be channeling in our art. And I fail at that 99% of the time. I make things that are too generic, that are not brave enough, that are not bold enough. And I do this on a regular basis, almost constant basis. But I think about when I started and I had no expectations of me. I had no reason to make money from my art. I had no need for it. I was, you know, I was working as a receptionist. Everything was A-okay. Like, it was fine. And I started putting this work out there, and slowly but surely I started hearing from people who said, I really resonate with this. And I think that once you put out that weirdest part of you, the thing that would just be horrifying to let people know exists inside of you, that's where real art starts to come out, and that's where real impact starts to happen. So whenever I do just the weirdest, craziest thing, that's the thing that always ends up paying off for me, where I get the biggest return on my investment, meaning that people resonate with it in a way that I never would have expected, because we're all little weirdos. Like, we are all so strange and so complex. And so when you stop trying to be who you think other people want you to be, then you'll discover that you're going to be exactly who other people need you to be.
I love it. I was just about to wrap up, and then you made me think of something else. I love it. It's like, honestly, I could be going down a rabbit hole here. But have you ever done any teaching? And I don't necessarily mean that as in, here's how I do what I do, but more about tapping into that tapping into that inner weirdo? Like, have you ever considered it? Like, is that something, is that a thing in Brooke's future?
It is a thing. Yes.
Oh, it is a thing. Excellent. Okay.
It is. Yes. So, I started teaching traditionally, like, you know, photo how-to stuff back in 2010. And then I realized that at every little workshop that I would host, I couldn't help myself going into these tangents of trying to get people to just make the weirdest art that they could and encouraging people to do that. And it was always those moments, those little pockets of weirdness in my workshops that people would write to me, you know, a year later and say, like, I still think about that from your workshop. Mm-hmm. And so then I started to do some motivational speaking on the topic of sort of how to embody your deepest, most important self that you could possibly put out in the world. And so motivational speaking has been a huge part of what I do. And it's one of my greatest passions in the world is to be able to somehow unlock that weirdo inside other people, especially, you know, like in a group setting where nobody wants to be weird at all, particularly at corporate events. That's the most fun place to do it. And so hopefully that will parlay this next year into a TED Talk. That's my big hope.
Oh, exciting. Well, I'm glad I asked that question because I didn't know that. So there you go.
Yes, I'm glad too.
Brooke, this conversation has just been so inspiring. It's Sunday morning for me as we record, and I just want to go and not do any of the chores, not do any of the boring things that I was supposed to do today, and just go and create. So, I mean, that's great for me.
I really hope that you do. And for me, I will be, just for context, I'm going to a frozen lake with a whole bunch of inflatable swans, like pool toys, and I'm spray painting them and sinking them in the ice and doing a photo shoot. So if that's not the weirdest thing anyone's doing today, then, you know, thumbs up.
I love it. And I cannot wait to see the results. Oh, my goodness. Now
I can't wait to share it.
I'm extra excited. just before we finish up, Brooke, where is the best place for people to find you online?
Yeah, my website is brookshaden.com. And then from there, you can find me on Facebook, on Instagram. You know, feel free to message me anytime on Instagram. I'm on there pretty often. So yeah, that's it right now.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Brooke. This conversation has just, as I said, it's inspired me, and I really hope it inspires our listeners to find their weirdo.
Yeah, thank you, Kim. This was wonderful.
If we were to provide you with some PayPal details or perhaps Buy Me a Coffee details, would you be interested in making a one-off payment to support us? In return, you'd be helping to keep the podcast going and would also get access to our bonus episodes. Let me know what you think via Kim at artsupplyposse.com or via Instagram.